What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Rummy and Ray Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Summerlin. And unfortunately, Rumford Johnny is not able to be with us this week. But in his place, we have the most capable, the great, Mr. Roto Pat, Pat Daugherty. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm good. I had to pay a lot of money to earn that title, the great. I was supposed to say, I'm only here because we agreed to change the format this week where we're talking about ISIS and the refugee crisis, right?
Yeah. No, we're just going to go through my Facebook feed and we're just going to talk about every post that's on there.
Yeah, that would be a 10-hour podcast.
It would be filled with so much sweet racism. Ugh, beauty of Facebook.
The greatest hashtags, T-A-E-Ks, you could ever imagine. So
Pat works with me over at Roto World. You can find him on Twitter at RotoPat. His rankings every week are a must read. You know, if you're having trouble with start sits, first place to go. Don't ask me on Twitter. First place to go. Go to his rankings. You find those on Roto World. Make sure you definitely give those a look. Give him a follow on Twitter, and we'd really appreciate it. So we're going to keep the same format, even with Rummy gone. We'll talk about the five biggest totaled games of the week. We'll do some stacks on stacks on stacks and then do a little bit of contrarian. We're going to be talking about prices, FanDuel prices. So if you're listening and going, well, I don't really play on FanDuel, we're exclusively talking about FanDuel, but I have good news. You can start playing on FanDuel if you go and use the promo code RummyRay, or if you go to our website and there's a link there and click on it. You can get a deposit bonus that's an earn-as-you-go deposit bonus, and you can get free entry into a 50-50 league. So you can get right into a cash league, use some of the players we're going to talk about tonight, and win some money right off the bat. So make sure you go and do that if you're not playing over at FanDuel. All right, the first game for this week is the first game, or the team we talk about first every week, and that is Buffalo at New England. I believe this is crazy. I think New England's been a part of the highest total the last 5 weeks in a row. It's just crazy what they're doing. New England 7-point home favorites. The game total's 48.5. It's actually a very low week of totals. There are none in the 50s, and this one is the highest. There aren't even any in the over 49, obviously. So it's a low week for totals. 65% of the money is on New England. There are some places that have gone to 7.5. So that's something to really keep hold of. So I guess we'll just start with New England. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting game for New England. They're without Julian Edelman, without Deion Lewis. They've lost those guys in the last 2 weeks. Do you see this kind of offense changing without those guys? Do you think they're just going to keep trying to do what they do?
Yeah, I mean, especially this week, it might be tough because, you know, Bill Belichick is probably the least emotional guy in professional football. But I think maybe the one time that changes is when he's facing Rex Ryan. And I don't know if he's going to be content to play a conservative, more ball control offense this week. And I could see them probably trying to stay pedal to the metal. But the first guy who comes to mind who I think that I want to use this week from the Patriots is LeGarrette Blount. You know, he's always been game plan specific, but with Deion Lewis gone and, you know, now Julian Edelman gone, I don't think they have the benefit of being game plan specific with Blunt anymore. And I think, you know, he's got to be almost a centerpiece. And if you ask me one guy I wanted to use in daily or season long this week from the Patriots, I would probably say Blunt. I mean, of course, I'm playing Tom Brady in season long, but the number one Patriot I'm thinking of this week is Blunt.
So I think that that's an interesting play because, you know, when you go back and look at what they did week two, they just completely abandoned the running backs. And
yeah, he had like literally two touches.
He had two carries. Deion Lewis had seven. The running backs as a whole had 10. They just completely abandoned it. But, you know, like you said, this is a situation where maybe they can't do that anymore. Tom Brady threw 59 times in that game, and they just used the short passing, but all that short passing was to Edelman and Deion Lewis, who obviously aren't there anymore. So I think it's interesting to go in and say, you know, what do we think they're going to do? Are they going to try to adopt that strategy, which worked really well? I mean, that game ended up being close because of some garbage time in the fourth quarter. And to your point about him not taking the foot off the pedal, I mean, that game would have been a huge blowout.
That could have been like a 60-pointer.
Except New England decided to keep their foot on the pedal, and they made some mistakes, and that allowed Buffalo to get kind of back into the game, although it was never really in doubt. So I think there's something to that. On the Blunt front, I don't Hey, that was the blunt front.
Yeah, that's a new podcast right there. The first LeGarrette Blunt specific only podcast.
I was thinking that would be discussing all Colorado marijuana laws, the blunt front.
You need to trademark that because you just made someone else a bunch of money there.
Yeah, I'll get on that. I got it before it posts. I'll do that. But I agree with you a little bit that he might be used a little more. You know, James White's not going to be Deion Lewis. I think we all knew that even before last week. And so maybe they do change the game plan up and they use Blunt. I don't think I'm going to trust him in a cash game, but for a GPP, maybe he's a little bit low owned because of that history, and you can throw it his way. What do you kind of think about Danny Amendola this week?
Say one more quick thing on Blunt.
Sure, sure.
Like, I'm almost close to cash gaming him, but this week there are like so many like really high floor guys, like, you know, like Sherkandrick West, Darren McFadden. Is just that I think there's just so many better options that you probably don't need to cash game him this week. So I think I would agree with you on that. Danny Amendola, you know, now we're starting to see some real at fantasy hipster stuff here going on with people talking about like Keyshawn Martin.
Yeah.
Like maybe he's the guy, and you know, he might not even play with the hamstring. And I think maybe, you know, that's coming from people who follow the team pretty closely, so I shouldn't be too dismissive, but you know, it's so easy to compare I can't even keep their name straight. It's so easy to compare Danny Amendola to Julian Edelman that, you know, it's become cliche, but they really aren't that different of a player. You know, I'd say Edelman is not quite Wes Welker. Amendola is not quite Edelman, but I mean, he's a shifty guy in and out of his breaks. He sacrifices his body for every catch. That's why he got hurt so much in St. Louis. And I don't see any reason why he won't immediately step in. And clearly he's not going to be the wide receiver one or probably even the wide receiver two Julian Edelman was. But I think Danny Amendola is really great plug and play wide receiver three. I think at least 5 to 6 catches is a very acceptable expectation. And yeah, he's someone that I'm buying the hype on.
Yeah, I think I am too. And it's important to remember that Edelman had 19 targets in that first game, and Tom Brady threw 16 of his 59 passes more than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. I don't think that Buffalo defensive line is as strong as it was perceived in week two, maybe. So maybe they don't focus so much on the short passing game. But there's a situation here in which Amendola gets 12 targets from one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And that's worth something, especially when he's $6,100 on FanDuel. So I really don't think that he's the touchdown threat Edelman was. That was one of the more impressive things about Edelman's season so far, is how important he was in the red zone. And I don't think Amendola is going to be that. But you know what? We probably didn't think Edelman was going to be that 2 years ago either. So there is definitely some upside. And at $6,100, what you would worry about is ownership. Maybe, you know, with all the talk about Amendola this week, it's going to be interesting to see how owned he is on Thursday night. And then I guess the question always when you're talking about New England is to Gronk or not to Gronk. He's $8,400. He's back up to $400 from where he was last week. He's only $8,000 last week, which, as we learned, was just dumb. Shouldn't have been that price. So he's back up to $8,400. He got 133-1 against Buffalo in week two, but Buffalo's just given up one touchdown since then, and that was to Eifert. And they've held every single tight end not named Gronk to under 40 yards. So it's one of those weird situations. Are you going to Gronk this week or not Gronk?
I'd probably hashtag Gronk this week just because there's just not many like super mouthwatering matchups elsewhere. And I mean, I'm not going to go Gronk in every lineup, but I haven't really settled on like who my second guy is going to be. And, you know, like you said, they've stiffened up against the tight ends, but it's Rob Gronkowski. He's tormented Rex Ryan for a long time.
Probably both, because Rob Ryan's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Rob Ryan's going to be on the sideline as a special assistant this week, probably, but. Yeah, I don't see any compelling reason not to Gronk this week. So I would say it's as good of a Gronk week as any other.
Yeah, I still haven't decided. See, I do have some other matchups I like. We'll talk about a few of them later. And so maybe in tournaments I won't. Cash game is always the tricky part. Who do you trust in your cash game if it's not Gronk? Maybe it's Jordan Reed, who I went with last week in cash, and he's been kind of money, although it was all touchdown-based last week. So it's one of those things I haven't decided yet, but it's certainly that decision you have to make.
Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting guys out there, like Eric Ebron against the Raiders, or even Jacob Tammy. I guess if Hank Time doesn't play,
that's my name, Jacob Tammy. Jacob, yeah. And that game, by the way, Jacob Tammy and Kobe Fleener. We'll talk about it later, but there's some interesting plays in there in GPPs for sure.
Yes, agreed.
So Buffalo, Tyrod Taylor. I had a lot of concerns about Tyrod Taylor early in the year, and I think they've come to fruition recently. By the way, there are so many players like that. I had a bunch of concerns about Stephon Diggs, and then he comes out and blows up, and my concerns have shown up the last couple weeks, and that Teddy Bridgewater, you know, doesn't throw the football more than 14 times a game, so that's a problem. But Tyrod Taylor, we started to see some of those concerns. He has 39 attempts total over the last two games. He had 27 last week. He had 12 the week before. But New England faces the third most pass attempts a game, which makes sense. They're blowing people out. Taylor threw 30 times in week two, which was his second highest total of the season. You know, he took some bad sacks in that game. He's taken bad sacks all year. He holds the ball a little longer, as we see happen with all playmaking, running quarterbacks. So, you know, that's something that can be expected. He did end up with 3 touchdowns in that game. New England's giving up just 14.7 fantasy points to quarterbacks at home, which is less than ideal, but Taylor's only 7,200. So what are you thinking for him?
I think I'm off Tyrod Taylor. I mean, I've seen kind of the same things you've seen. I think he has only 4 passing touchdowns over his past 4 games. And yeah, he's a guy where if he's playing, you know, a collapsing Dolphins defense, he can like really make life miserable for you. But he's just, you know, he's not a very complex quarterback. I mean, he can make big plays, but yeah, he can be easily confused. Like you said, he always holds on to the ball too long. He's always at risk of an injury, really. Even on that Thursday night game, you know, last week, he kind of tweaked his knee. He stayed in the game. But yeah, he's at New England. I just think this game's going to be a lot different than the first Bills-Patriots game. I think it's going to be more low scoring, and I could see it being kind of a really long day for Tyrod Taylor. So yeah, he is someone I'm not on this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then the problem with him, I mean, he's not a cash game guy at all for me. And then the problem with him is, who do you pair him with in GPPs? Like, who are you going to stack him with? You're going to stack him with Sammy Watkins going against Butler, who's actually started playing like a Super Bowl hero. I mean, what he did last week against Odell Beckham was really impressive after that one long play.
Besides that 87-yard touchdown.
Yeah, besides that play. But I mean, that's going to happen, especially when your safety takes you out instead of the guy you're trying to tackle.
That was unideal.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I would say less than ideal. That would be accurate. But, you know, you look at Sammy Watkins, he's wide receiver 22. He's $100 more than Crabtree. I'm not that interested in him. You can't trust Robert Woods. Charles Clay has been inconsistent at best. So if you want Taylor, I guess you could go naked Taylor, which I do most nights in my dreams. But I don't understand. I don't understand who you're going to pair him with. And that presents a big problem, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to add to that. I couldn't have broken it down better than you did. It's just I just think it's going to be a long day for the Bills offense in general. Maybe not McCoy, who's running as well as he has in probably 2 years and is on 10 days rest. But I'm just not feeling the Bills passing attack at all this week.
Yeah, you mentioned McCoy. I think that's one guy I'm interested in. If, you know, I'm looking at this game, and New England's 7 now. I think it's probably moved closer to 8 or 9 by the, you know, by the kickoff, because if it moves off 7, if it moves to 7.5, there's no reason for it not to move closer to 10. So I actually might end up betting the Bills in this game, and it'd be for the reasons that you said. The New England tries to do ball control with Blunt, which isn't going to be as successful against Buffalo. And I do think that McCoy can have some success. You know, he gashed New England pretty good week two, 89 yards on 15 carries. They've strengthened since then, but the type of defense that they run, you know, they have the 29th best stuff rate according to Football Outsiders and the 3rd best second level in open field rates, which means that they let running backs get to the linebackers and the safeties, and then those guys make tackles because they have, you know, otherworldly linebackers back there. But Jamie Collins, we still have no idea what's going to happen with him. And then McCoy's the kind of guy that if you let him get into the second level, he can cause a ton of damage. So I think that this matches up very well for McCoy. And at his price, I don't think he's going to be very high owned. He's running back 7. He's 7,500. So he's a bit of a contrarian GPP play, and he's shown his ceiling lately. So I like him a little bit this week.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been running like like I said earlier, probably the best he's looked since, you know, the middle of 2013 with Chip Kelly. So he's back to making those kind of crazy cuts. And those are very interesting stats there you had about the Pats letting running backs get to the second level. So, yeah, he's the one guy who I'm kind of intrigued by.
Yeah, by the way, those Football Outsider stats, if you look at their adjusted line yards, I think they do, if you understand what you're looking at, I think they do such a great job of showing how teams attack the run. You know, and it's different, you know, 3-4 fronts and 4-3 fronts. In a 3-4, you're expecting the linebackers to, you know, to make the plays. In a 4-3, you're expecting the defensive line. You know, just generally, that's obviously a gross generalization. But it's a really interesting look. So if you get a chance, I'd recommend going and looking at those Football Outsider stats. I find them very, very interesting. All right, the next game we have is Oakland at Detroit. Oakland are 2-point road favorites. The game total is 48. 77% of the money is on Oakland, but it looks like the line might move Detroit's way, which is called a reverse line move, which we've talked about on the podcast before, but basically means there are big bets on the Detroit side, even though most of the public money is on Oakland, which, I mean, the public bets $10 and the pro guys bet 10,000. So obviously they're going to respond to one of those more than the other. So that's something to keep in mind. I still think I really like Oakland in this game and a lot of Oakland's kind of skill position guys. What do you think?
Yeah, I would take the over on this one this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
This game kind of has the looks of a bonanza to me. And yeah, I can't really. I don't know what your feeling is on what Carr's ownership percentage will be this week, but I mean, he's coming off a quote unquote bad game where he still had 2 touchdowns and 300 yards. And, you know, he's in like the top 5 in passing touchdowns. And of all people, Aaron Rodgers kind of got the Lions' yards per attempt back down last week, back down to quote unquote only 8. But I mean, the Lions have been in the top 3 all year in yards per attempt, which, you know, tells me they're giving up a lot of big plays. And I think it sets up beautifully for a bounce back for Derek Carr. I think he's a top 5 player this week.
No, I agree. And it's funny that only 8. That's not damning with faint
praise. No, exactly. It was like 8. At one point, I think it was over 9.
I know. It was crazy. It's just so funny how bad they were. But, you know, you made a point, and it's a point I've been thinking about. Derek Carr had a bad game last week, and it was only 300 to 2 yards and 2 scores. And Detroit played well last week, and Aaron Rodgers only had 333 yards and 2 touchdowns. So it's so crazy that the way we view them, you know, what prism we're looking at them through, expected versus real, you know, really, really changes the way we view the spectrum. If Teddy Bridgewater came out and threw for 300 yards and 2 touchdowns, we would think that he's had the greatest game of his career. So
that's a good point. I mean, it did take Rodgers 61 attempts.
Sure. And he was awful for 3 quarters. So there you go. One of the things I love about Derek Carr is, first of all, the price has, you know, stayed down. He's quarterback 9, he's 7,700. I don't think that price is as low as it has been in the past, but I still think it's a little lower than maybe it should be.
It's low for, yeah, how he's performed.
Yeah, I think it's still a little low, but it's getting closer where he should be. But the one thing I love about Derek Carr, and it's one of the things I don't like about Tyrod Taylor, especially in tournaments, is that you know who you're going to pair him with. He only throws to 2 people. And so, unless Andre Holmes is randomly getting touchdowns and annoying you.
Or even Seth Roberts?
Roberts.
He had like 2 really big catches a week or 2 ago.
And Clive Walford, apparently.
Yes, oh my gosh.
He's playing 18 snaps a game and still getting touchdowns.
Yeah. What a world.
It's nonsense. But so if you're looking at this game, you know who you're going to pair him with. It's either going to be Amari Cooper or Michael Crabtree. Do you have a preference on either of those guys this week?
I really don't. I mean, I generally lean Amari just because I'm all about the big play ability for a tournament and, you know, someone who can score a 65-yard touchdown. Even though the overall numbers are about the same, I just, when I think of like a tiebreaker, I mean, like, you know, similar targets, similar production in the past 4 or 6 weeks, but I lean to the guy who's just more explosive, and that is clearly Amari Cooper, and not a forbidding matchup in any way, shape, or form this week. And I think, you know, Crabtree definitely has the higher floor, but I think I'll go with Cooper's ceiling.
Yeah, I don't hate that. You know, the one I will probably start. I will just have 2 lineups, and one will have Carr with Cooper, and one will have Carr with Crabtree, and that'll solve all my degenerate worries.
Yeah, I never get that in the weeds. I'm not out here with 200 lineups. I'm a very simple man. Yeah, I'm a simple 5 to 6 lineup man.
Yeah. So, And I'm sick. I know that. And I'm
from the Stone Age. Yeah.
No, I'm a sick human who plays way too many lineups. But if I was going to pick one, you know, I actually think it might be Crabtree. I think you make a good point about the upside, and I think you're right. But I am a little worried about Darius Slay, who has been shadowing recently and has played a lot better. And Michael Crabtree, if Slay does shadow, then that means that Michael Crabtree is going to get to go up against either Nevin Lawson, who played well against Devontae Adams, but as we've discussed on this podcast multiple times, Devontae Adams isn't that good. But Nevin Lawson is in the concussion protocol, so he might get like Bill Bentley or somebody like that a lot, which is something that I'm interested in targeting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to disagree with. I mean, yeah, I mean, neither one of – I mean, yeah, it's kind of like you can't go wrong, and you just made a much better argument for Crabtree than I did for Cooper.
I liked it. I think you have a good point there. You know what's funny? I said this about 1,000 times. People keep talking about Derek Carr throwing deep this year, and he's not. Like, his deep percentage is up a little bit, but I think his ADOT is actually down from where it was last year. It's just when you have Amari Cooper, and Amari Cooper can do stupid things after the catch, it makes it look like you're throwing deep because there are longer passes. And Amari Cooper does stupid things after the catch, and that's something really important to think about. But on the running game, any interest here in Latavius Murray?
Yeah, because I think, you know, the Raiders are going to have the ball a lot. And, it's tough to predict what the Lions are going to do, because it could be a shootout. I mean, the Raiders, they allow the second most passing yards in the NFL. But I think the Raiders are going to have the ball a lot. And I think maybe it might be kind of a week where Carr's setting up the pens, you know, getting them down inside the 10, and then Murray's knocking them down. Because I think the Lions have allowed the most rushing touchdowns in the NFL. And Murray has very predictable usage. I think he's had 16 touches in every single game.
Yep.
And so that combined with, you know, a team that would, at least to the naked eye, seem to present a lot of rushing touchdown opportunities. I'm not wild about Murray. The only reason I'm not wild about Murray this week is it seems like so many guys in front of him just have really great spots, and he's only got a good spot. But he's just very predictable, and if you want to go with him as your second running back, I couldn't argue at all this week.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. You say predictable. I might use him in cash just because of that. You're right about, you know, 16 touches a game. He's guaranteed. You know, Detroit played over their head a little bit last week and their Super Bowl, as I think it was. But, you know, Latavius Murray has 44.5% of Oakland's total offensive touches this season. Where are you going to get that for $6,800 at running back 15? I mean, that's money in the bank. And Detroit, although they played well last week, has not been as good against the run. And even if that reverse line move is saying something and Oakland ends up getting down in this game.
It's just that Floyd Mayweather's bet $1.5 billion on the Lions.
Show me the ticket. Until he tweets out the ticket, I won't believe it.
But sorry to interrupt your train of thought.
But I would say that, you know, even if they get down, he's game script independent. I mean, he had 5 targets last week in that game that they were losing. He's on the field. That's just what he's going to do. And so I like him a little bit in cash, and I like him in GPP because, you know, to return 3 times value at only 6,800, you know, he's only looking at 21 points, and that's something that he can do, especially with his pass game involvement. You know, I think what it sounds like from both of the way we're talking about this game, you and I are going to be on Matthew Stafford a little bit this week. Is that true?
I mean, I've got him 12th in the rankings, which is probably the highest I've had him in a really long time. And it's a weird week because, like, the people who've got, like, the people ahead of him, you know, Palmer's got kind of not a tough matchup, but he's got a tougher matchup.
It's a tough matchup.
I mean, for him, matchups haven't meant a whole lot. He just shredded the Seahawks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is kind of why I say it like that. But he's got 2 hurt receivers, and, you know, you got Aaron Rodgers going on the road to Minnesota. You got Phillip Rivers coming off bye without Keenan Allen, so maybe they'll have maybe they'll be more run heavy. You got Matt Ryan, who's Matt Ryan. You have Tony Romo, who hasn't played in 2 months. Blake Bortles coming off his worst game of the year in a short week. So you just got everyone in Stafford who's kind of got a lot of questions. And Stafford, you know, in 3 of 4 games since he got benched, has had multiple touchdowns. He's been playing a little better. The Raiders bleed air yards. So, yes, begrudgingly, I guess I would say I'm on Matthew Stafford a little bit this week.
And if you want to kind of just break it down to its base level, you have him at quarterback 12, and he's priced at quarterback 18, which means he...
That tells you, yeah.
He has value.
Yes, exactly. Maybe I should be using him. So maybe this week I'll have 8 lineups instead of 6, and the 2 are just very Stafford specific.
I used him. I used Stafford last week at 6,900, and he returned value on that. And I will use him again this week at 7,000. I think that he's in a really good spot here at home with Oakland, who is probably going to struggle to defend, you know, Calvin Johnson, who looked healthy enough last week, but he got 780 and 81 against Sam Shields, which is better than most people have said this year against Shields. So I do like Calvin a little bit at 8,100. And then you talked about Ebron. So are you interested in Ebron at 5,400?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's another guy who isn't had any like huge games, but I think of him as a big play threat. And the Raiders have been allowing big plays to tight ends. And the game is in Detroit. It's on the fast track, so to speak. And he's a guy, you were saying you like some tight ends this week. But to me, the tight ends are kind of shaky this week. So I think I'll definitely end up with Ebron in probably 2 or 3 lineups, and you know, more tournament than cash. But I'm liking Ebron this week.
And the Raiders just bleed touchdowns to tight ends. They've given up a touchdown to a tight end in every game but one, and that game was against Owen Daniels, the ghost of Owen Daniels.
Yeah, yeah. So Ebron has had some pretty good games, but he hasn't had a blow up game yet. And this could be like, you know, his blow-up week, maybe 2 touchdown type of game. So, yes, I am very intrigued by him.
And then I assume you're with me on the running game that you just – you can't touch it. Like, because we have no idea what's going to happen.
No, I mean, you got the Lions website now calling for Amir Abdullah to get re-involved. So, but I'm doubting he represents the views of Jim Caldwell. I wonder if Jim Caldwell has a computer. maybe that's too low of a blow. But yeah,
it's an accurate question, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing any Lions running backs this week, I mean, you are shining a flashlight in the dark, which works occasionally, but not a sound strategy.
And what I would say to that point is, Joik Bell and Amir Abdullah rotated pretty evenly in the first half last week, and then Amir Abdullah has this great kick return to open up the second half. The play of the game sets him up in touchdown situation, and you know they never look back. And then he was completely out of the game in the second half as they nursed the lead, which tells you all you need to know about how much they trust him, which in their defense, they probably shouldn't trust him because he fumbles the ball every game.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a guy where like it's a lost season and he's a rookie. So you want to see him get a quote unquote look down the stretch. But like you just said, I mean, it's easy for us to say that here in fantasy land when in real life he has, you know, I'm sure disappointed the coaching staff so many times. So yeah, it's not like we have like truly a leg to stand on with that one. So
and why does Jim Caldwell care about the future of Amir Abdullah when he's clearly not going to be there this offseason? His number one goal should be to be building his CV for whatever terrible team hires him on as an offensive coordinator next year. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not buying into the Abdullah coming back. I think he's droppable in redraft, and I'm definitely not using him this week.
I agree on both fronts.
Our next game is a game that I think I'm going to be against a lot of people on, both public and professional in the betting realm, and that is Cincinnati at Arizona. Arizona's 5-point home favorites. The game total is 48. 72% of the money last time I looked is on Arizona, and the line is running that way. Listen to the Behind the Bets podcast with Bob Scucci of the Orleans this afternoon. He said that both the professionals and the public are on Arizona. Everybody loves Arizona. I love Cincinnati in this game. Houston was a classic trap game for Cincinnati. They saw Arizona coming up. They had Houston on Monday night. That's a classic trap game. Arizona's coming off a big win. This is a classic letdown for them. I think Arizona's being super overvalued in this game. And so I will be betting Cincinnati at whatever that number lands on. And I'll probably put a little bit on the money line as well. I think they might be able to win it on the field. And so that's going to obviously color the way I view this game. And the way I view this game is I think that Andy Dalton is going to be very, very underowned at quarterback 7,700. And I'm interested in playing him this week. What do you think?
Yeah, there's no doubt he's going to be very underowned. It wasn't just last week. He had a nice game, I think, 2 weeks ago. He's kind of in the middle of a slump, but but not to pre-2015 standards, not in like a crazy Andy Dalton slump, but there's no doubt he's on his worst stretch of the year. He's going to be underowned, but you know, I can't really decide what to do with the Bengals this week. You laid out the compelling case there, but you know, I can see why the money is on Arizona because
absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, they're a short week, really tough loss. They're going 1,800 miles across the country. Bruce Arians doesn't seem like the kind of coach really allows would to try, you know, allow a letdown week. He will stay on your ass all week. And, but yeah, I think it's going to be kind of a low scoring game, really, because, yeah, like for all the reasons I laid out with Cincinnati. And then you got Arizona, who might be missing two of their top three receivers. And you have Cincinnati, who kind of down low is not so great against the run. And maybe, I don't know, maybe the Cardinals will run more this week. I think the Bengals are like 4.7 yards per carry or something like that. So I might take the under on this game, but I probably am going to take Arizona.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think a lot of people are going to be on it. I just think that this is really a contrarian opportunity. And they, you know, especially, it's so difficult to get contrarian opportunities with good players. And I think that at this point, this year, we have to classify Andy Dalton as a good player, aside from what we saw Monday night, which was kind of vintage Dalton, kind of scary.
Let's just try to pretend that didn't happen. It's a weird week for the Bengals because your logic is sound on why you could be betting the Bengals. But then again, you got AJ Green facing Patrick Peterson. You got all of a sudden the Cardinals used to get dismantled by tight ends or really stingy against tight ends this year. So I just don't know how I feel about – I've been all about the Dalton I can't think of a clever enough word for what he's done this year, but I've been all about Dalton not being Andy Dalton this year. But I'm just having a hard time seeing a big game this week.
You mentioned AJ Green. That is a part of this offense that I just won't be on in DFS because he's getting just 12% of the offensive touches. 30 of his 79 targets came in two games. He's averaging 7 in the other games. You know, so much. I talked about this 2 years ago and I guess not last offseason, but the offseason before. If you look at AJ Green, and it's continued to this point, if you look at AJ Green as compared to his other kind of elite wide receiver peers, he is not the same on a per target basis. On a per target basis, he is quite a bit worse. It's kind of like he's kind of the Matt Forte of the wide receivers in that on a per touch basis, he's a little bit worse than they are, which is fine for both of those guys. It's fine for Forte because Forte continues getting, you know, 70% of the work or did before he got hurt. And it was fine for AJ Green before this year when they've discovered Eifert. Jones has been getting a lot of targets. And so it's one of those situations where if you're betting on AJ Green at wide receiver 4 and you're paying that price for him, then you're hoping that he gets his 13 target game and not a 7 target game. Because I see, you know, little chance of him returning value with 7 targets. And by the way, if you go and look at his big games, they came in those two big games. So it's one of those situations where I'd avoid him. And like you said, the thing about Eifert is this team used to be so bad against the tight ends, and now they're not. I mean, you could take a walk down narrative street and say that Dalton's going to want to get him involved because of how poor of a game he had last week, you know, with the 3 drops and the 3 really important drops. But I don't see it. If I'm pairing Dalton with anybody, it'll be Marvin Jones because you have that GPP ceiling. You know, he's only 5,400. This is a guy that could easily get you 5 times value at that price, you know, if he goes and has one of his Marvin Jones days. So I think that would be the play. But This is my point, by the way. I think you're being perfectly sound and reasonable when you say I want to stay away from Cincinnati, but that's one of the reasons I want to get on Cincinnati.
Which we're both making sense. You know, what a wonderful world.
it's a scary world when you and I are both making sense. I would argue.
Before we get off that, it's just like AJ Green's just had a weird year. I think he's only had like 4 75-yard games. And, you know, Eifert has been very boom or bust too. Or I think this was before the 3-touchdown game, but I think like 60%, as of a few weeks ago, like 66% of his points had come in like 2 or 3 games. And it's, I don't know. I just can't get a handle on it this week, so I'm off of it, which is why sharps like you are on it. So
do not ever. I am not up there in sharp land. I aspire to be.
You called me the great Patrick Daugherty. I am now putting you in sharp land. So
we'll see. Do you want any part of the running game? I mean, Gio Bernard, 6,300. If you think that Arizona is going to win this game, then maybe he has a little bit of love. Are you interested at all in that?
Not really. I think from what I remember, the Cardinals maybe allow an above average amount of receptions to running backs, but nothing super crazy. And you know, Jeremy Hill just, you know, I don't know what to do with that at this point. I think I've got him much lower in the consensus in the ranks this week. I think I've got him like 30 or 31, and yeah, I'm off the Bengals running game.
I have two things about Jeremy Hill. First, I have a league where my first three picks, it's a PPR league, my first three picks were Eddie Lacy, Jeremy Hill, and CJ Spiller. So,
yep. I mean, I wish,
tell me how that went.
I wish that I could. I was super in on both Lacy and Jeremy Hill, so I have no leg to stand on there.
It's been a rough year in that league. But the other thing I would say about Jeremy Hill is someone asked me today on Twitter if he was droppable. I do a waiver piece every week. You can go read it on Roto World. And in there, I have the drop list. And they ask, you know, when will Jeremy Hill be on the drop list? And I said, probably not right now, but I am really close to saying that you can drop him in 10-team leagues. It's just, that's how bad he's been.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
been awful.
He's just really messed up some gorgeous spots. And I think it was in the Rich Rebar's worksheet this week, had some insane stat where, like, I think him and Isaiah Crowell have like the most games, something like most running backs have had like at least 8 appearances. Jeremy Hill and Crowell have the most games of a sub 4.0 yards per carry. So it's just, yeah, it's hard. You know, we think we know he's a good player, but it's hard to find the light at the end of the tunnel. He's given you nothing to like latch onto this year. And there's just, you know, no reason to think it's going to change in the near future.
I think you made a really good point about, if you're playing the Arizona side and, you know, they have Floyd who has a hamstring, they have Brown, Smokey who has a hamstring, you know, maybe they do try to pack it in and run Chris Johnson, who's touched the ball 55 times in the last two games.
Yeah, insane workloads all year, basically.
And he's only 6,800 on FanDuel. So I assume from, you know, kind of from that analysis that you're all in on 6,800 with him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm never that well thought out with anything in daily, but he'll probably be my running back too in a few lineups. Yes,
for sure. I mean, that volume alone is worth paying for in GPPs. You worry about the touchdown upside with him, and I think that's always going to be a concern. You know, I guess I'm going to be off of Palmer. You made some good points about him being matchup proof, but he's 8,200. I think you could make an argument that the Cincinnati pass defense is playing better than Seattle's at this point. And obviously it's going to be in Arizona instead of in Seattle like it was last week. But they have been unbelievable. They've given up 11 passing touchdowns total this year. They've given up 4 the last 5 weeks, which included games against Ben Roethlisberger and Russell Wilson. And they shut down Hoyer for 3 quarters, which you say, oh, it was Brian Hoyer. But Brian Hoyer, since coming back in as the starter, has been putting points up on everybody. So it's, or at least fantasy points. So it's one of those things. I think they're a lot better than maybe people give them credit for. So I don't think I'm going to be on them. Do you like anybody in that passing game?
I mean, it's interesting with, like you said, the Bengals secondary has been playing very well. But Larry Fitzgerald, I mean, is he just going to see an insane amount of targets this week? I mean, it's almost setting up where it's like you almost have to believe he's going to get 10 to 15 targets. Even if they go run heavy, he might get 10 to 15 targets. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily on Larry Fitzgerald. I'm definitely not off of him.
Yeah, in my notes I have, if I'm playing one of them, it's Fitzgerald, especially if we figure out that Floyd is out. If Floyd is out,
I think Floyd will be out. I noticed him pull up in that game even before they announced it, and it just, I don't know. He seems like he's going to be out to me. That was not good analysis at all there, but just reading the Twitter tea leaves, it seems like he'll be out.
Well, you saved it with the I don't know. So, so that's fine. The next game we have is Indianapolis at Atlanta. Atlanta 6-point home favorite. 64% of the money's on Indianapolis, which is interesting. The total is 47.5. You know, this Atlanta team is one of those teams that they started strong. Obviously, they started undefeated. And then I think everybody who actually watched them play said, this team isn't very good. And then they've gone, they've lost 3 of the last 4 against bad teams, including a Blaine Gabbert-led San Francisco squad before the bye. And it's still interesting. It seems like Vegas is still giving them the benefit of the doubt. I agree with the public in this one. 64% on Indianapolis. I agree with that completely. I have no idea why Atlanta is 6-point favorites in this spot. But is there, you know, I guess Matt Ryan's story is very similar to the Falcons story, and that people think he's a better fantasy player than he actually is. He's priced at quarterback 8. He's $200 less than Tony Romo. He's $100 more than Derek Carr. Is there anything you want, any part of Matt Ryan that you want this week?
This is another really weird game for me to like get my head around, because they're both coming off bye, and then you got Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback. And so coming off the bye, you know, maybe Chuck Pagano will have a pretty good game plan for Matt Ryan. I mean, I knew that was going to be the immediate response. But so, I mean, even if he did, though, like I say they got a very burnable defense. Maybe the Falcons dialed up some good stuff during the bye week. I mean, they have the weapons, but I don't really know where I'm going with that, because I'm not going to be on Matt Ryan. And what do you think Devontae Freeman's ownership percentage is going to be? Because I feel like he's a guy where people just don't want him to be a thing, but he's been a thing all year. He still leads all running backs in yards from scrimmage. He leads the NFL in touchdowns. It's not an overly imposing matchup in the Colts, and it's like, this is a week where I almost feel like it's a week where you've got to pay for Devontae Freeman, but I don't know. That depends if you think he'll be high owned. To me, I feel like people are almost sort of wanting to forget about Devontae Freeman, and he'll be under owned.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be a little bit under owned, at least under owned from where I think he should be. This Indianapolis run defense, I've said all year, you know, you go back and look at the numbers, and they've given up touchdowns, and that's really hurt them. And they gave up some huge games, you know, to LeGarrette Blount and to Mark Ingram and Kyrie Robinson, and that hurt them in the rankings. I thought that this Indianapolis defense was playing better than they were given credit for. I thought they were being, as a whole, killed by their offensive ineptitude, and just teams getting up to big leads and being allowed to just pound them. But that changed after Henry Anderson went down. I don't know how they were going to recover from that. That guy was playing out of his mind. I don't think it's a particularly good run defense anymore. I do think that Freeman should be able to have some success here. And so I agree with you. I think he'll be a little lower owned. It'll be something I'll watch on Thursday, obviously. But if he's under, you know, if he's under 15%, under 10% owned, then I will be interested in playing him, even at that price. You know, the problem is that he has to score so many points at 9,100 to return his tournament value. He has to score, you know, at least, you know, we're looking at 27 points, at least 28 points. And that's, it's just hard. It's just really hard to expect that from anybody, much less a guy who, you know, hasn't really hit those ceilings in a couple weeks. I mean, he hasn't hit that ceiling since week 6 against New Orleans.
Part of that's because they have not been giving him the ball. I mean, he's been getting the ball a lot, but I'm hoping one of their bye week adjustments is that, you know, okay, Matt Ryan's got a great reputation around here, but, you know, the world is catching on that he's just, you know, he's not a superstar. He's a good, competent quarterback, but he can't win you games by himself, and that maybe we should be more focused on Devontae Freeman than we are Matt Ryan. You know, I'm not confident in them making that change, but I wouldn't be shocked if they did.
Yeah, I agree with that to some extent, but I also think that you can attack Indianapolis through the air. So if they're really looking at this, they're saying, if they were really looking at it, I think that they would be setting up something for Jacob Tammy, because Indianapolis has just been terrible against tight ends. The game that they gave up to Owen Daniels before the bye was just completely unacceptable. and they've been so bad against tight ends all year.
Can we just talk about something real quick? I'm going to interrupt you, because, like, fantasy football, the fact that we both independently brought up Jacob Tammy in week 11 of 2015, you just never know what in the world is going to happen. All right, I don't know why that was not a necessary aside.
No, it's completely true. Like, it's...
I mean, we both literally were thinking about Jacob Tammy before the podcast. I mean, it's just, you know, what a world.
Well, when you live in a world where Kirk Cousins throws for 4 touchdowns and ruins all of my dreams and my entire Twitter mention feed, then we're living in a crazy world.
Yeah, remember, you told me earlier this week that the Cousins game was a dividing line in history. We are now, everything that happens, what is today? Today's the 18th. Everything that happened before and after November 15th is pre and post Cousins game.
That's right. We are now living in AC. They're going to have to change the history books because that was the craziest thing. I'm so bitter. I'm sorry, all of our listeners. I screwed up. I'm a terrible person. Send me all the mean trolley tweets you can. But anyway, back to Tammy. you know, he has 22 targets total in the two games with Hankerson out. It looks like Hankerson's going to play this week. So, you know, that hurts a little bit. But he did have a 10-target game for that. In fact, he has three double-digit target games in his last five.
Yeah, Hankerson was kind of trailing off even before he got hurt. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, he was trailing off. You know, there is always the concern, the weekly blurb that I have to write about Roddy White complaining about his workload. And then the coaching staff coming in and saying that they're not going to do anything about it. I'm not worried about Roddy White. So I mean, I like Jacob Tammy this week. He's 5,300. He's tight end 13. He doesn't really have to do too much to return that value in a GPP. I like him a lot. I'd like him a lot more if Hankerson sits, but this lineup is great. And then, Julio's Julio. So he's going to get 10 targets. So there you go.
Yeah, without Antonio Brown playing this week and with DeAndre Hopkins against, not that Darrell Revis is quite the Revis Island of old, but you have DeAndre Hopkins playing with TJ Yates against the Jets. I mean, Julio is the clear consensus number one receiver this week.
So I was thinking, it's about TJ Yates. I was thinking they signed, they picked up off waivers Brandon Whedon. And I was thinking, who was their backup to TJ Yates? I couldn't even think about it because obviously Savage is on IR and they cut Mallett. So who was the backup to Yates before they signed Whedon?
I don't think they had one. I think they were two QBs deep. They might have had someone on the practice squad they've been, supposedly grooming. But I think after they cut Mallett, they were only two quarterbacks deep. Yes.
Well, I mean, when you have TJ Yates, why do you need any more insurance?
Well, when you have Brian Hoyer, you definitely don't need any insurance. So.
Good decisions. Good decisions all around. They're going to make the playoffs. That's going to happen, by the way.
By the way, it's a Ryan Fitzpatrick revenge game this week.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The people were tweeting about it today. He's apparently still steamed about how it went down. So, yeah.
Would you be upset if you were replaced by Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer? We haven't talked enough about how terrible that decision was, by the way.
I actually talked about it a lot.
Well, okay. Well,
on Twitter, I was hashtag beefing with lots of Texans fans all spring and summer, and that is one of the rare arguments that I won going away. I just never understood. Okay, Ryan Fitzpatrick is clearly never going to be the guy, but that decision was so nonsensical to me that, there was zero evidence that Ryan Mallett was going to be good. We had ample evidence that Brian Hoyer is worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick at the very least, and it was just pure Bill O'Brien hubris, really. I mean, Bob thinking he can, he thinks he has the touch of gold syndrome where he just thinks, I'm the football man and I'm gonna make this work. And he couldn't, and everyone knew he couldn't, and then it didn't work.
In his defense, he made people think Christian Hackenberg's a first-round quarterback.
Yes.
So
one of my it's kind of gone away a little bit. One of my favorite Saturday is my off day. And one of my favorite things is just reading tweets about Hackenberg passes like going into the turf.
My timeline on Saturday is what you're telling me.
Yeah, exactly. But has he been playing better? I feel like I haven't been seeing as much Hackenberg hate the past month.
Better is a relative term. He's Saquon Barkley, who, as you know, we talk, Rummy and I talk a lot about the draft in the spring. So if you've been itching for draft talk, Saquon Barkley is not going to be out for a long time. He's a true freshman, but he's the best true freshman in the country, at least definitely the best true freshman running back, maybe the best true freshman overall in the country. And so Saquon Barkley has kind of hidden a lot of the deficiencies of the offense just because he's at least second day running back and maybe first day running back. And so that hides some of the deficiencies of Hackenberg and allows him to run more play action. And that obviously helps, but Christian Hackenberg is not a, I don't know how he got down this rabbit
hole. We just had a Jacob Tammy tangent, devolve into Christian Hackenberg talk.
Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I tend to do that to people.
No. We both have that shiny object syndrome.
I'm the sidetracker.
the sidetracker? Is that your Xbox Live name?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, it should be.
Sidetracker. All right, so yeah, I guess we'll get back on it with Indianapolis. People, I assume because of the way the human brain works that they're going to be people on Matt Hasselbeck this week. He was a mid-range quarterback too in his two starts against Jacksonville and Houston. You know, Atlanta has actually been a lot better against the pass than maybe people are giving credit for. They've given up just one 20-point game, and they've given up multiple passing touchdowns just three times, although one of those was to Blaine Gabbert before the bye, which I can't get over that game. It was
the bye week to think about it. They won't make the same mistake.
I hope so. I really don't see much upside here, and I'm happier to roll out Alex Smith and Brock Osweiler for cheaper than Matt Hasselbeck. Do you see any upside here?
No, I don't. And he's the guy where this is not scientific analysis, which is my specialty is non-scientific analysis. But when I see Hasselbeck in the field, like, he looks like a late period Mark Brunell to me, or he just looks like frail. And I see him. I think he's more likely to get hurt than he is to have a 3-touchdown game. And I mean, he was surprisingly competent in those two starts. But I mean, on the road against, like you said, a very underrated pass defense, I mean, I just don't see the reason to fire him up anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. If I'm touching anybody in this passing game, it would either be T.Y. Hilton or Kobe Fleener. The thing about
I feel like Hilton could be like dangerously underowned. He has something crazy, like 700 receiving yards still, where he hasn't been quite as bad as people think. And the game's in a dome. So, yeah, I feel like Hilton could be a nice, what you call contrarian play.
No, I absolutely agree. You know, people, I think that he hasn't scored that much, if I remember correctly. I don't have that number right off the top of my head.
It's like, yeah, it's very, it's like less than 3, I think.
Yeah, he scored exactly 3. You got it right. Okay. So, I mean, that kind of makes people think that he's not been as good as maybe he has been. He's down to wide receiver 17. He's 7,200 on FanDuel. I mean, that oozes upside. I think that there's so much upside here. And when you look at Hasselbeck's two starts, the only constant in those was T.Y. Hilton. He had 22 targets, 13 against the Jaguars and 9 against the Texans. Other receivers had big games. Andre Johnson had it against Houston. Moncrief and Fleener had some big games against the Jaguars, but they were quiet in the other games. The only constant guy was T.Y. Hilton. He threw to T.Y. Hilton early and often through both of his starts. And I would expect that to continue. And like you said, indoors, and we know it's still true today. It's kind of one of those stats that's been around so long, you start to doubt if it's actually true. But T.Y. Hilton is better indoors. He just is. He's better on turf, and he's allowed to really use that speed. And so I love him this week at wide receiver 17. And then my Fleener story, he's tight end 21. He's 5,000. New OC Rob Chizinski was committed to using his tight ends before the bye. Both Fleener and Dwayne Allen saw 61 snaps. Jack Doyle played – Doyle. What a name that is. Played 31 snaps. Fleener had 6 targets in that game. He has 17 total over the last 2. He's not done much with the work. But if you're looking for a worse tight end defense than the Indianapolis Colts, then you found it in the Atlanta Falcons. And so they've given up 7 touchdowns to tight ends this season, despite playing a ton of teams with no real tight end to speak of, including San Francisco. They gave up 2 to Garrett Celek, Tampa Bay without Austin Seferian Jenkins, which I could just say Tampa Bay at that point, Washington without Jordan Reed, Houston and the Giants, who both those teams have given up on tight ends, although I guess Larry Donnell was playing at that point. But again, they've given up on tight ends. So I think Fleener's in a great spot here, and he's super low priced, and I bet he's really low owned. So I'm interested in Fleener a lot this week.
Yeah, I agree. And he's a guy, not this year, I think his yards per catch is way down, but he's a guy where, you know, a lot of times tight ends, you know, they're always in the 4 to 5 catch range, but he's always averaged more yards per catch than like kind of the standard tight end. So he might only need 4 or 5 catches to maybe get you 70 or 80 yards. And like you said, not terrible percentage, not decent odds that he scores a touchdown, because you got an offensive coordinator committed to tight ends. And like you said, you've got a defense that's been horrendous against tight ends. So I completely agree with Kobe Fleener being a nice, you know, nice little play in daily.
How about Frank Gore? You have any interest in him?
I do. I was going to say one more thing, too, about T.Y. Hilton that we didn't add earlier, is that his numbers are not as bad as people think, and he was banged up, and now he's coming off a bye, so he's healthy as he's going to be all year. And Frank Gore, you know, I think Frank Gore is another kind of great running back, too, type this year, where they've kind of done their best to stay off, keep his workloads down, but before the bye, his workloads were way up. But now, you know, he's had the bye to rest up. They are starting Matt Hasselbeck. It doesn't take a stretch of logic that they're going to try to establish the run. And he's been not catching a ton of passes, but he's been catching more passes. And the Falcons allow a ton of receptions to running backs. And I think he's got a really high touch floor this week. And I think it could be a Frank Gore week.
I absolutely agree with that. You know, you mentioned his touches. He had 54 touches total the two games before the bye. He had 20 touches in both of Hasselbeck's starts early in the season. I think there's a real chance they just try to run him out of the building. They just say, all right, we're going to try to run at you. We think we can attack you that way. Atlanta hasn't been giving up as many touchdowns as they were early in the season. Early in the season, they just gave a ton of touchdowns to running backs. They haven't been doing that lately. But I think that there's a spot there for Frank Gore. I'm not going to use him in cash because I generally don't use running backs on the road, and especially running backs who are underdogs on the road in cash. Even though Frank Gore, like you mentioned, he's not as game script dependent as maybe we thought he would be at the beginning of the year, but I'm not as interested in him. But I do think I'll have him in some tournament lineups. I like him a little bit there. Our last game, we have Dallas at Miami, the long-awaited return of Tony Romo, Tony Jesus Romo, who's going to save the Cowboys season. It's a pick 'em right now. The game total is 47. 65% of the money is on Dallas. The line looks to be going Miami's way a little bit. I saw that it was -1 in some places. So I'm not sure if that's going to be a line movement. That'll be something to watch. And I guess the only real big question here is, do you play Tony Romo coming off of this injury? Which he's definitely going to play this week. So do you play him?
I think I am playing him because we've been kind of talking. Well, we talked about earlier that. I talked about it earlier. Just not really loving the matchups for a lot of the kind of usual suspects this week. And obviously, you worry about a guy coming off a long layoff. Even Ben Roethlisberger didn't look good when he came back from a long layoff a few weeks ago. But yeah, you got the Dolphins who coming off a really inspired win. And I actually, honestly, Dan Campbell's kind of an easy target for jokes, but I actually have been a pretty big fan of the job he's done. But
he hasn't buried any footballs.
No, yeah.
But exactly, that puts you in it.
They're just, I mean, and Dominican Sue has been wrecking people the past few weeks, but they just don't have the horses on defense. And, you know, the Cowboys, they know that they have to win every game from here on out. And this is kind of be like almost like one of those like Super Bowl type games for the Cowboys where they have to win. And I just think, you know, and Romo, he's got his supporting cast is basically at full health. He has a running game that is functioning better than it was before he got hurt. Not that McFadden has been amazing, but he's been better than Joseph Randall. And yeah, I'm playing Tony Romo this week because you got Dez, well, should be back finally about 100% after warming up for two or three games here. And he's got a Dolphins defense that gives up a lot of big plays. And I think I'm playing Romo this week.
Yeah, I think my two concerns with Romo are the price. I mean, you're getting no discount on him. He's quarterback 6. He's 8,000. You're getting absolutely no discount. And then I worry that he's going to be owned a lot, you know, as the shiny new toy. Hey, everybody, Tony Romo's back.
Is that how that works with guys coming off long layoffs? I can't decide if, you know, people are like, oh, you know, I need to give Romo a game. Or if, like you said, the people are like, oh, I got to get Romo in my lineup. So I will defer to you on what is the more common phenomenon.
I don't see. I haven't seen any data on it, but I can give you my unscientific. I could channel you.
Hey, that's my niche.
So I've talked to 3 friends this week. And they've all told me they want to play Tony Romo this week, you know, just because he's back. Now, I live in Texas, so.
Yeah, but it's as far as anecdotal evidence goes, that's actually pretty good if you've talked to 3 random people who want to play Tony Romo.
Well, they're not random people. I'm not just like dialing people in the phone book. But yeah, they are, you know, 3 people that hadn't talked to each other. So I think, you know, I do think there's going to be a little bit of that. And we'll see. I if his ownership isn't as high on Thursday night, then I'll feel a little bit better than it. I would also say maybe another concern would be his attempts. He did attempt 45 passes in that first game, but they were down by 10 points for a lot of the second half against the Giants. He was at 27 attempts when he got hurt against Philadelphia midway through the third quarter, which, you know, puts him on track for more what he had last year. He only averaged 29 attempts last year. I expect him to be higher than that. The only reason he was a fantasy superstar last year is he was so efficient.
I was going to say he was like legendarily efficient last year.
Yeah, unbelievably efficient. And that was one of my concerns with him in the pre-draft, in the summer process. I thought I had him lower than people. Simply, I didn't think he was going to get hurt, but simply because I didn't think that he was going to be able to maintain that efficiency. And so that's going to be the question. Is he going to be kind of the low attempt guy he was last year, but maintain the efficiency? Is he going to be more of the high attempt guy we saw week one? So what is it going to be? And it's difficult for me to know right now. So I'm not going to use him in cash games, but if his ownership is low enough, I can see using him in definitely in GPPs. You know, we talked about Dez. Brent Grimes isn't on the injury report, so I guess he's going to be back. But Brent Grimes hasn't been Brent Grimes for the last month, and he always kind of falls down at the end of the season. His price is so high, Dez, wide receiver 3, 8,400. It seems a bit high to me, but, you know, I don't really like any of those guys. I guess the most interesting pass catcher is Jason Witten. Are you interested at all in Jason Witten this week?
I mean, I'm not, I mean, he's just all floor, you know. I just don't see, even with Romo back, I don't ever see the ceiling, and I'd rather take a chance on Eric Ebron scoring two touchdowns than I would on, you know, Jason Witten having a 7 or 8 catch game with two touchdowns, where, I mean, he's perfectly fine if you just want a reliable, you know, you just want, if you did all, your only goal is to guarantee 6 catches at your tight end spot, then I'll play him, but yeah, he's not someone I'm on.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And, you know, it's tough for me because Miami has been kind of dreadful against tight ends. They couldn't figure out how to cover.
Miami's been, like, really up and down against everything.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, they just have not had much consistency on defense. Or, you know, they changed identities kind of, like, midway through the season. They have a hard-to-prognosticate defense.
On the running game, this is going to be one of those tricky spots because Darren McFadden's been living off of volume recently, but Tony Romo's back. So do they change it? Is he still going to be a, you know, guaranteed 20 touches a week? His price isn't that bad. It's only 6,800. I'm not trusting him in cash games, but I do think I'll run him out there in GPPs because at 6,800, he doesn't have to score. He doesn't have to score a ton to meet that tournament value. And I think he's got a chance. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, without getting into the psychology of ownership and daily, like in terms of just like pure running back plays this week, I really think he's like a top 5 or 6 guy. Where Romo's back, but you know, this is a one back backfield. It's even with Romo last year, it was a run dominated offense. I mean, I think he's basically a guarantee for 20 touches. And I mean, last week, the Dolphins' run defense looked much improved. I mean, they were just blowing up kind of the Eagles running game.
And Ndamukong Suh decided he wanted to play football.
Yeah, I mean, Ndamukong Suh was just dominating last week, which is a little concerning, but his touch floor is so high that, and this is, it's a defense that maybe it's improved, but there's a lot of evidence that suggests you can run on the Miami Dolphins, where I think just in terms of, without getting any into the daily psychology, I think he's a top 5 or 6 running back play this week.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I don't see it as a great week for running backs, and I agree with you. There's something to be said about that touch floor and what is potentially a really good matchup. On the other side, I have to say I have no idea what to think about Ryan Tannehill at this point. His lack of basic awareness at times is just stunning. If you watch that safety from last week, you know, if you watch that play,
and well, for the record this week.
Yeah, four in a row they could have this week. What an important record for them to have. But if you look at that safety from last week, like you could see that the defensive back was blitzing off the end. Everybody could look at it and see it. And if he knew that, and once the tight end released, he had an easy throw into the flat, it would have been a good gain. And he just never even looked that way, was completely blindsided. And it seems like that happens to him every single game.
Yeah, you do not see many quarterbacks take completely unexpected blindside hits in the end zone. So,
except for Ryan Tannehill, and it seems like it happens every game.
I believe both the first two were botched snaps, but one of the botched snaps, the entire offensive line clearly knew the ball was being snapped, and Tannehill didn't. So it speaks directly to your point. Like the entire line shifted, and then they snapped it, and somehow Tannehill had no idea.
It's just.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect, especially this week, because the Cowboys' pass defense, they're not making, like, big plays. Like, they're not, like, picking off a ton of passes, not even getting, like, a ton of sacks. But they're really not breaking much. They're bending a little when it comes to yardage. But I'd say Tannehill's, again, just in pure raw rankings, I think he's, like, in the 15 to 17 range this week. And, you know, he's always a decent bet to get 2 touchdowns, but he's had a lot of zero-score games, too, and he's got a lot of weapons, but he's got a lack of awareness, so he's just a hard guy to rely on. And there's nothing overly compelling about the matchup where I'm like, this is going to be a Tannehill week.
And to your point about the matchup, the Cowboys have given up 48 points total the last 4 weeks to Eli, Russell Wilson, Sam Bradford, and Jameis Winston. And none of those players went over 16 points.
I did not know that. That's a great nugget there.
And so I don't think Tannehill's better than any of those four guys at this point. Even Jameis, I don't think he's better. Yeah, I shouldn't say that. Even Bradford, I don't think he's.
Yeah, maybe.
but yeah, I don't think he's discernibly better maybe than those guys. And so that's tricky. Jarvis Landry's always an interesting cash game option just because of his workload. I mean, he leads wide receivers in percentage of team touches with almost 18. He's third in percentage of red zone touches with 18.6. He has double digit targets in 6 games, including each of the last 2. I mean, there's so much floor there, but the problem is we just haven't seen the ceiling except for that one Houston game. He has not returned the GPP value you need on 7,200 except one time this year. And so it's tough for me to use him there. And like you said, if the Dallas defense may be playing better defense than people are giving it credit for, he could see a lot of Byron Jones this week in the slot. It's just one of those things where I'm probably staying away from him and Rishard Matthews.
Yeah. I mean, Landry he's uncommonly reliable for like a non superstar receiver, but that includes reliably, you know, not scoring like a ton. I mean, I couldn't have done the Landry breakdown better than you did.
You always come up here and you try to prop me up. I feel like there's something coming. The left is coming soon.
I'm willing to concede points. I'm a grown man now. I'm an adult. I'm 29 years old. So.
I don't accept that. This is the internet, I think. So are you worried at all about Jay Ajayi for Lamar Miller's workload? Any?
I mean, I was kind of worried last week, and then they still only gave him 6 touches, and they haven't really been involving him yet a ton in the passing game. And Lamar has been such a beast the entire Dan Campbell quote-unquote era. I mean, the touches have fallen off. I mean, I'm not concerned, but I thought he'd maybe have a few more catches by now, and he outgained Lamar last week on fewer carries, and they still didn't really – they weren't going out of the way to get him involved, and – Campbell seems like a guy where he might be. I feel like he like really tries to have his finger on like everyone's individual pulse, and maybe he doesn't want to wreck Lamar Miller's confidence. And so, I mean, I'm getting into like unprovable points there, but on the whole, I'm not super concerned about Jay Ajayi yet.
Yeah, I agree with you too, and I don't think maybe they trust Jay Ajayi fully as a pass protector, and so you're not going to see him break into that role. Although he was in college a pretty good receiver.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I'm surprised that he hasn't. He didn't catch any passes last week. I can't remember if he did 2 weeks ago.
I don't think he's caught. No, he hasn't caught a pass yet. I don't think, if I remember off the top of my head. So that's something that Lamar Miller is always going to be involved in, and so that obviously gives him value. I don't know. They're at home, and Dallas has not been great against the run, but they do get Sean Lee back this week. I just don't know if I'm trusting Lamar Miller in cash, but I am interested in tournament because Lamar Miller's demonstrated upside over the past 4-5 weeks. It's just been outstanding.
Yeah, he's demonstrated tournament winning upside. So,
yeah, I agree completely. All right, so now we're on to my favorite part of the show. We talk about some stacks on stacks on stacks on stacks. We've talked about a few of mine already. The most notable, the one I like best, I think, is Derek Carr and Michael Crabtree. One that I'm pretty interested in this week. I do worry about ownership with this stack, but it's one that I might use in a cash game, even though the price is a little bit prohibitive. And that's Marshawn Lynch in the Seattle defense. San Francisco has been much better at home on defense this year, but Lynch still went for 122 and a touchdown in their blowout win week 7. He gets them at home now. I assume the Seattle defense is going to be heavy owned, but maybe Marshawn Lynch isn't after he's been kind of disappointing lately. And he's still pricey at 8,100. You worry about him hitting that kind of tournament ceiling that you need. But I like both of those plays a little bit. And obviously that's a good correlation play there. You got any guys you like?
Yeah, touching on Marshawn Lynch, he's just like, he said he had a really good game against the 49ers, but that was basically his only good game of the entire season.
Yep, for sure.
I mean, he had a decent game in week 1, but I just don't know there. I mean, it's hard to go wrong with the Seahawks defense at home against Blaine Gabbert. But, you know, maybe if Marshawn Lynch is still banged up, maybe he doesn't get enough work. Maybe Thomas Rawls is involved this week. But, yeah, I mean, the logic there is hard to argue with. In terms of my own stacks, I'm not really good at conceiving stacks. None of these are like truly based in logic, but I thought about doing the correlation play between and kind of a contrarian correlation play since the over-under is so high between we touched on this a lot earlier, but between LeGarrette Blount and the Pats defense. For some reason I have a nagging feeling that the Pats are just going to destroy the Bills and that it's just going to be like basically the 180 of week two. But it's not really based in any like fancy numbers or anything
like that. There's some big letdown potential. I mean, Rex Ryan won his Super Bowl last week.
I know. I my favorite thing ever is making Rex Ryan Super Bowl jokes. I tweeted after the game, this is Rex Ryan's first Super Bowl victory since beating the Colts.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just get this. The game is just so hard to predict because you got the Patriots who just lost two of their top three weapons. And I just can't shake the feeling it's going to be a blowout week, and I can't shake the feeling that the Patriots are going to put Tyrod Taylor in a world of pain. So it might be my contrarian stack play of the week.
No, I like that. And I mean, they sacked him a ton week two, and like we talked about, he holds the ball like all those guys do. So I think it's a really good play. I have some other kind of, you know, it's all this week for some reason. It's all my stacks, or at least my regular stacks are this defense and running back correlation. And I really like Jonathan Stewart and the Carolina defense. I think Washington offense, you know, we saw over the 2 months before they played the worst defense of this millennium, that's going to be something fun to look at this offseason. I think was New Orleans, at least the first 10 weeks of New Orleans, the worst defense we've seen in the 2000s.
Well, it was at least the worst defense since the 2012 Saints.
Yeah, that'd be a fun. The five worst defenses of the league of the 2000s, and all five are Saints.
You could do the five worst Saints defenses. Yeah, I mean they've got a, you know, what's the running theme there? You know, you've got two defensive coordinators with historically bad defenses. You know, I wonder who that points to. Maybe the guy assembling the roster.
Who knows? But all that dead money that currently resides on the Redskins roster, actually? You mean that that's not helping? Anyway, so I don't think that the Washington offense we saw last week is in any way indicative of the Washington offense. They're on the road at Carolina. Carolina's, you know, defense has been playing really well. They shut down Marcus Mariota last week, who was in the exact same situation that Kirk Cousins is in this week, who had just come off a big game against the Saints. So there's a really interesting situation here. And then Jonathan Stewart, I think the dirty little secret about Jonathan Stewart ever since their bye is that he's not getting taken out in the red zone anymore. He's at least four red zone touches in every game since the bye week. He's running back 12 at 7,000. I think there's a ton of value there. I love him this week, both in cash and in tournaments. And so I think that that's a good stack. And then we talked about one of my other ones, my correlations, is McFadden, who we both talked about we liked, and then the Cowboys defense. There is no reason that the Cowboys should be as bad as it's been. There's just no reason. Greg Hardy is a good football player despite being a terrible human being. Tyrone Crawford and Jeremy
Minson.
For a
second, I thought you were going to say Greg Hardy is a good person.
No, I did not. You would never hear me say that.
You weren't going to say that, but for some reason, when I heard you say good, I was like, wow. And then, like, oh, good football player. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, our history together suggests that I really... I believe Jerry Jones when he says that Greg Hardy is a great leader. You know, he's just a leader. That's all he is. He's just a leader.
Yeah, he's leading by lots of dubious examples.
But in real football, there's no reason that they've been as bad as a pass rushing team as they've been. There's just none. Miami's given up at least four sacks in three of the last four games. Ryan Tannehill, as we talked about, has the awareness of a drunk meerkat. And so I think that I think meerkat's actually a pretty good. And anyway, so the thing is that I don't believe in Miami's going to be able to stop the pass rush. And I think that there's so much talent that it has to turn around eventually. So in tournaments, it's definitely a tournament play. But in tournaments, I'm kind of on McFadden and the Cowboys. You got any more stacks or you got some contrarian guys you like?
I've got dumb stacks that I don't even know if I want to say these on the air.
Go for it. I'd like to.
I'm so bad at the stack logic. Like, I don't even. It's like one of the things I'm really behind in DFS. I like Derek Carr this week because, as we talked about, I think he might be kind of underowned. And then instead of deciding between the two receivers, maybe stack him with Latavius Murray, because I feel like they're going to be marching up and down the field. There'll be a lot of scoring opportunities against a run defense that's allowed, I think, the most touchdowns in the league.
Yeah, I looked that up. That is accurate, yeah.
So, yeah, maybe instead of deciding between Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, you put in Latavius Murray. I don't know. But that's not a very compelling – that would not meet the – like, Evan Silva would have, like, 40 better stacks than that. and so would you. So, yeah.
Well – yeah, I mean, but he, I guess there's some hope that he catches a couple touchdowns. So maybe it works out. You got any contrarian guys you like?
Contrarian, is there any way you contrarian play Nuke Hopkins this week? I mean,
yeah, that's interesting.
Because you're talking about a guy who's been one of the three best receivers in the entire NFL, and he's a lock to go like super underowned with TJ Yates and Daryl Revis and his future. And I mean, the risk is like so tangible, like so easy to identify. I mean, there's a reason he's going to be underowned. But when a guy is that good, can you really have zero lineups with him in it?
That touchdown he caught on Monday night, it's just insane. Unbelievable. It's just
insane.
You know, when everybody was talking about Odell Beckham's catch, we're going to go off on tangent land again. When everybody was talking about Odell Beckham's catches last year, did people forget the catch that DeAndre Hopkins made in the preseason last year?
I think they did.
Over the middle, like over people, like two people caught it behind his head the same way. Like he is unbelievable.
He's a freak, yeah.
Just unbelievable. I think that's a great point, that he is probably going to be under-owned. You know, we talked about a few of my contrarian guys. We talked about Jacob Tammy. We talked about some contrarian stacks with Matthew Stafford and Eric Ebron, which I think both of us are kind of on. Andy Dalton and Marvin Jones is something I'm interested in. You know what? A stack I definitely will have, a tournament lineup I definitely have, is Brock Osweiler and Demaryius Thomas. I think that
I'm going to make a counterpoint to this after you're done talking.
All right, go for it.
You go first.
I think that the line, this line, it's Chicago favored by one at home. I think that line is insane. I will be betting Denver for sure. There's not a doubt in my mind, because this team might be better without Peyton Manning. You could argue that Peyton Manning was a hindrance to this team, and that getting somebody in who can at least run Gary Kubiak's offense the way that he intends. Osweiler's more athletic. He made a basketball scholarship, I believe, to Gonzaga. We saw a little bit last week that he can move and escape pressure. I actually think that that's a good thing. And I actually think that Brock Osweiler will be good for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders as well. So, and Brock Osweiler targeted Demaryius Thomas, I think, four or five times after he came in. So there's something here. I think that he's a little bit underpriced at 6,000, and so if I'm going into the bargain bin, I'm going there. And then Demaryius Thomas, his price is down too. He's 7,700, so that's a really low price stack that has some potential against the Chicago defense that you're going to have to show me more than shutting down Nick Foles to make me believe that you're
they
got
actually benched.
Yeah, well, sure, they got him benched, but did they get him benched, or did Nick Foles get himself benched? I think that's a question.
I think it was a correlation play.
Yeah. So tell me why I'm wrong, though.
Well, it's not why you're wrong. It's just like, for as bad as Peyton Manning was playing, like one of the really strange things about his struggles is that, you know, aside from the touchdowns, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas were almost getting their normal numbers.
Yeah,
and it's like, can Brock Osweiler really bring... Is Demaryius Thomas really going to have a higher yardage rate with Brock Osweiler? Is Emmanuel Sanders really going to catch more passes? Where that's one thing I've had a hard time figuring out all year. You know, for as bad as Peyton has been, he was still getting these guys their numbers. So
he was targeting them though.
He was targeting them like crazy.
I think they had, combined at one point, I don't know what it is now, but I remember I looked 2 weeks ago and combined they had 48% of the Denver targets, which is insane.
I just don't know how much their numbers can really improve. And then, so, but I was thinking almost my contrarian play would be, I don't know if I really have the guts to do this or not, would be Jay Cutler, who has had at least his lowest point total since returning is 21.7. He just dropped like 27.5 on the Rams on the road. And, you know, the Broncos, you know, maybe Brock Osweiler plays well, but maybe he's a three and out machine. And even against an elite defense, the Bears just have the ball the entire game and Jay Cutler gets three scores and his ownership percentage is, you know, going to be extremely low against the best defense in the league. And he's just been playing so well that I almost feel like he deserves a shot in your tournament or, yeah, I don't know.
I agree with that completely. I don't disagree with that at all. I, you know, I've been on Jay Cutler a lot lately. I mean,
yeah, no one's talking. I mean, very few people are talking about how well he has been playing. It's crazy how well he's been playing.
No, he's been playing like you could make an argument that he's been a top 12 real life quarterback at this point.
Absolutely.
His interception percentage is lower than it's been throughout his entire career. It's so far below his, you know, his career average. And you know what's funny, and I made this point before the season about Jay Cutler, is that we might have been underselling Adam Gase. When you look at Peyton Manning's career, Peyton Manning bettered his career average in interception percentage, in touchdown percentage, and yards per attempt in Denver under Adam Gase. We might have been underselling that guy, and I bet that guy's a head coach next year.
That was going to be my next question. Is he going to be a head coach? Because, I mean, if you're reviving Jay Cutler, you're doing something right.
No, he's definitely a head coach. And then talking about Jay Cutler, I'll definitely have a Jay Cutler lineup. And again, just like with Derek Carr, it's so nice with Jay Cutler that you know who to pair him with. You pair him with Alshon Jeffrey if he plays. And I hate you, John Fox. But Cutler's only 7,000, and it's just too low. That's the simple math of it. It's too low. So I definitely agree with that. Any other guys you like?
I like too many other running backs, but it could be like, I've got a weird feeling it could be like a nice Melvin Gordon week. So you got a Chargers offense that, you know, the season's going nowhere. Keenan Allen's hurt. They've had a bye week to think about everything. You know, they want to prove this first round pick is worth it. And I could almost see them, you know, just feeding Melvin Gordon heavy early on. But that's all, yeah, and that's like all purely theoretical. But just a guy who, you know, not very many people are going to be on. And I almost, they were kind of trying to commit to him a little bit before the bye. I just wouldn't be shocked if maybe Melvin Gordon had his best game of the season, even against a pretty tough Chiefs run defense.
The only problem with him, because I was on him the week before the bye, I was on him against Chicago, and the only problem with him is those touchdowns. He has to start scoring. But that seems fluky. You know, he was getting some red zone looks. I don't know. I want it to happen, Melvin Gordon. I'm going to believe. So
what are we thinking about Case Keenum here? I mean, let's just get the elephant in the room. I know Nick Minzio is sick enough where we'll have multiple Case Keenum tournament lineups.
Evan Silva with his Zach Mettenberger. Instead of Zach Mettenberger this week, he's going to be playing Case Keenum. But I mean, it's such a, you know, we make fun of it. That's such a sound theory in cash. I have no idea why people pay for quarterbacks in cash games. Because if you get a $6,000 quarterback, they need 12 points on FanDuel to return cash value. 12 points. And maybe 14 if you really want to be safe.
He's vaguely interesting because he's kind of a big play guy off like play action. And the Ravens, you know, be giving up huge pass plays all year. But yeah, I can't go there.
Yeah, no.
I was just joking when I brought him up. I'm just going to claim I was joking when I brought up.
Unless he goes big, and then you're just going to tweet. Talk told you about Case Keenum.
It's going to be awesome. As I mentioned on the pod.
I mean, for sure. So that about wraps it up for us. Thank you so much, Pat, for coming on. It was a pleasure as always. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at RotoPat. Make sure you read his stuff at rotoworld.com. Like I said, his rankings are your start sit Bible. Make sure if you have a question, don't ask any of us jabronis on the tweeter machine. Make sure you go and ask him. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at RM Summerlin. You can follow our departed. It sounds like he's dead. Our not here co-host Rumford Johnny, who is still very much alive. Follow him on Twitter at Rumford Johnny. And until next time, talk to you later.